include practically any kind of a taking of this kind, and any kind of a thing.
The way we have it now?
Yes.
Well, I'm wondering if the way we have it doesn't limit theft simply to those things contained and enumerated in 1, 2, 3,
well, the way you now have it definitely
six.
Does.
Put the period after thereof.
After the word thereof. And if there was some way, either preceding that or after that, or in the preamble or someplace, particularly as respects this section or this chapter, how it would be divided up on theft, as they expressed here in this comment on that what is intended by this section is to include every type of conduct that was stealing or had anything to do with the taking or withholding or deceiving or in any way, shape, or form that is herefore been listed in 1,000 different statutes. You can't put in those words, but for the expression of intent, so that the need to include these spatial things, like, say, for instance, the shoplifting or the credit card, was not necessary. Is that possible to do?
Hard to get through the argument, so there are rules.
Well, I'm sure it's possible. It would be kind of tricky type drafting to get, you know, clearly exactly what you want to say, but I think it's a possible thing to write, don't you know?
Oh, I think it's possible.
Section 223.1 is pretty broad, and then they add and the like, which covers whatever else is left out.
Whatever else is left out.
Well, now,
I'm not sure that all of those devices of that kind are going to work, you know.
Well, that's the thing. You can't be sure that any of these devices are going to work for certain until you get them in practice, but...
Well, what I meant was this effort to strive for breadth without detailing, I think in a lot of places it's just going to backfire because of the general feeling that criminal law, when the guy's
should
liberty
be narrowly
is that,
construed.
It's going to be narrowly construed whether it says so or not. Well, that catch-alls are going to not catch anything.
Let me make two or three observations. It seems to me that the way we've written Section 2, person commits theft when, with intent to deprive another of property or to appropriate property to himself or to a third person, he wrongfully takes, obtains, or withholds such property from an owner thereof, period. Now that comprehensively covers theft. It, as we know it today, covers the multifarious larceny statutes that we presently have in the book. I was anticipating that when we got into the grading of the offenses, that we'd make reference to larceny from a person, larceny from a store, larceny from a motor vehicle, possibly, insofar as the grading of them was concerned. But I think what we need, assuming that we all were to agree with me that a period here would comprehensively cover theft or larceny as we have it now, I think what we need two things. We need some transitional language or some language which going to lead us to the necessity of delineating sections 3, 4, 5, theft of mislaid property, theft by extortion, and so on. We need some language bridging the gap, carrying us over into that. We also probably are going to need a new section, whatever it would be, section 11, theft by embezzlement, a general comprehensive theft by embezzlement section, maybe. Nothing else. I don't know. But how we're going to affect this, I don't know.
Well, I don't think you're going to need a section on this.
You're not.
No, I don't. Yeah, because I think that as we apply our definitions that are in this draft, that the conduct that we think of as embezzlement and has been known as embezzlement will be covered by these other provisions.
Doesn't cover the withhold. There's your always been your old problem.
Okay.
It was obtained legitimately. It's what happened to it after that.
Then we need it. Then we need a declaration that embezzlement is covered. And where are we going to put it?
Well, it appears in sub 1 of section 2.
All right. You think then put a period after thereof and put theft may be committed in any of the following ways?
Well, I'm afraid if you're doing that, then you're saying, in effect, what the problem with the first paragraph is that you're saying it can be committed in any of the following ways, and then by inference you're saying, and in no other way.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. The list would have to be exhaustive,
yeah,
or else it's not going to be, unless you want to go back to including but not limited to.
Yeah, that's why I wondered about including and not limited to earlier, because I'm not a judge, but you say in any of the following ways, why what you're saying is in only the following
that's
ways.
Right,
yeah.
And that's why it's unacceptable.
But if you put including but not limited to in a criminal statute, you're going to run into problem of vagueness.
It's limited, not including. I know, I was joking on that, but I think that's the problem. Once you start specifying, you get into some difficulty in that. But could you get around this by putting your period in at the end of thereof? I'm thinking off the top of my head now. And then say something to the effect of it's the intention that the act of taking, obtaining, or withholding shall include forms of taking, obtaining, or withholding of this sort. So that if any of these traditionally didn't involve one of those acts, you could make it clear that you mean taking, obtaining, or withholding, but you also mean these other things are included, if in case anybody's going to debate with you, that they don't constitute one of those three verbs.
Yeah. Here, how about this? Period after thereof. Theft includes, but is not limited to, strike out the by. Conduct known prior to the effective act. Strike out the by, write down every one of those. Theft includes, but is not limited to, conduct known prior to the effective date of this act as larceny, by trick, embezzlement, trespassory taking. Theft includes, but is not limited to, acquiring property mislaid, lost, delivered by mistakes, provided in Section 3. Theft includes, but is not limited to, extortion as provided in Section 4 of this Act. How about that?
Well, could you eliminate the included but not limited to by saying, which is, as I understand what the intent would be, it would be, in a sense, to say, hereafter, theft shall also include, colon, numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever they would be. Because these, as I recall, like acquiring property mislaid or by extortion and so on, are separate things, separate from larceny.
Right.
Like extortion and so on. No. As of right now, we would not consider extortion in the sense of larceny. Isn't that right?
Right.
Right. Right. Theft. How did you say that?
Well, in trying to express what I think you're trying to arrive at is that hereafter or from the date of this code or whatever it may be, theft will also include extortion by deception, what you do with lost or mislaid property, and so on, which would be the things that, as of now, are not thought of in the sense of larceny.
Well, where's the language that you use, Kathleen? I've seen it so many times. It's after the effective date of this act, etc.
Yeah, well, you can do it. How about on and after the effective date of this act, the taking, obtaining, or withholding of property
includes, or theft includes the taking, obtaining, or withholding of property by acquiring, by requiring property lost, by extortion, by deception.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of going in the direction where you're thinking, because the verbs seem to me to be kind of the crucial.
If I'm suggesting this, assuming that I interpret your intention right, that as near as it's possible, you want to cut off all the technicalities, the complications, and these distinctions, and you want consolidation.
Should we have a chance to create new deceptions and technicalities?
Yeah, right.
Well, of course, that's
the whole purpose. That's the underlying purpose of this statute, is to consolidate these things.
Well, we're all agreed on the intent here, I think, aren't we?
It isn't the idea that
it's the drafting.
Our idea is not that we're just providing six categories of theft.
That's right. We're not.
We want to have we have prior to that a very broad statement which is going to cover an awful lot of theft. The intent really is to try to define thefts that aren't covered in our new first sentence with a period after thereof.
Mm-hmm. Or to clarify that
or
you
to
intend
clarify
that
the
kind
means
of
which by which they break the first part of the first sentence.
Any sneaky, underhanded, unfair, improper, wrongful.
Well, no. Of course, this is really the fundamental part of the whole theft statute, and there's no question about it that if we're faulty there, I mean, our whole purpose is going to go out the window. And I've noticed that there have been two basic approaches to this consolidation. The consolidation approach that we took in this draft, which follows the approach that they took in New York and that they are taking in Connecticut. Then there's another approach which Michigan has taken and which Illinois took. And of course the Illinois section was set out for you. If you still have your first draft there under the text of other states on the blue paper, the Illinois section appears there. But the way they approached it was a person commits theft when he knowingly obtains or exerts unauthorized control over property of the owner, or B, obtains by deception control over property of the owner, or C, obtains by threat control over property of the owner, or obtains control over stolen property knowing the property to have been stolen by another, and intends to deprive the owner permanently, knowingly uses, conceals, or abandons the property in such manner as to deprive the owner permanently, or three, uses, conceals, or abandons the property, knowing such use, concealment, or abandonment probably will deprive the owner permanently such use or benefit. Then it goes into the penalty provisions. Now, that's the approach.
Right, what section is that?
That's 16.1 of the Illinois.
I guess we don't have it.
Here, okay.
No, you should have it there.
Here, it is. Here, it is. Here, it is.
I hesitate to bring that up, frankly, because if we adopt that approach, that means we're going to have to rewrite the entire draft, because the rest of our draft, of course, our sections are based upon our basic section here, section 2. And but I thought I should bring that up, that in the event some of you hadn't read those revisions of other states that appeared early in the book, that seems to me that's an approach to the draft that eliminates the problem we're faced with here.
Boy, their section on theft is kind of short, isn't it?
Yeah.
About two pages.
their comment on it.
But they've got an awful lot of other stuff in there that appears later on in their other practices.
They indicate on it that they intended that to include larceny and embezzlement, extortion and blackmail, fraud, false pretenses and confidence games, and receiving stolen property. I have a... I cheated. I've got the annotated copy.
Okay. Including but not limited to those things?
It's sufficient, they say it's sufficiently broad to be applicable to many acts formerly known as other crimes. Thus, for example, when they cite those... Mm-hmm. Specifically, is their intention to the obtains is the old larceny, exerts unauthorized control is the old embezzlement.
I would assume that, that a statement of intent like that, accompanying a generalized statement, for instance, like this you have here of the word thereof, would be very helpful and very meaningful. Any future question as to
now restate that the statement of intent to what effect?
Well, as she just read your comments in a sense that could accompany a published draft of this. When you get to the point where you're publishing drafts of this for consideration of the people. That comments like she just read would be extremely helpful, not only to the people who are studying at that time, but when eventually it would get to the courts.
It becomes a matter of legislation.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It spells it out.
It spells it out without the necessity of using a whole bunch of words in the statute itself.
Yeah. No, I buy that. What's the matter with that, Ron?
Nothing.
What did I do wrong just now?
No, nothing's the matter with that. In fact, I think it's a good idea. And as far as the drafts were concerned, I felt all along that when we got to the point of circulating these drafts, that the comments would go along with them,
right,
so that people could clearly see what we were trying to do. Although I hadn't gotten to the point of any decision in my own mind whether or not we wanted comments when we put this in final form for the legislature to adopt, and because this, of course, this is a policy consideration,
this would be a part of committee report to the legislature.
Yeah.
And the committee report, I presume, is a part of the legislative history.
Well, one of the things you know that
mangled thereafter,
I assume, is going to be when you get to the point of publishing drafts, one of the biggest problems are going to be these special interest groups, the cattle people and the bankers and the insurance companies and what have you, that, well, you haven't taken care of this kind of thing, or you haven't taken care of that kind of thing.
Of course, an awful lot of those statutes have come about. Interestingly enough, Debbie might be interested to know this annotated thing where this commentary is intended as the police officers. You know how we have the little one that the police officers bought, this annotation connected to it. The preface of this is signed by O.W. Wilson, the superintendent of police in the city of Chicago.
It occurred to me that what this commission needs is a couple of real good
lawyers.
No, confidence man. They may be one of the same thing.
Well, I'm reminded of a constitutional revision commission that we've been arguing around the table for 2 or 3 hours since Don Husband's plan of the country. So what this outfit needs is a couple of good lawyers. We have 2 Supreme Court justices, a state attorney general, and I don't know what else. The Judiciary Committee and a whole outfit.
No, what you need is a real ingenious confidence man and thief.
I heard about that. And then he went on to compound it, I guess, by saying, what I mean is really good lawyers.
Good lawyers. what I mean is good lawyers, he said.
Oh, I was going to say this is
walking with O'Connell, Gordon, and someone sitting around the table.
These penalties where these people come in though and say, I think they let's say we aren't taken care of. And what they're saying is we don't think the penalty that you have invoked is severe enough. For instance, we don't want to go by the value of the cow.
Well, which is really another way of saying you were not taken care of because you're not giving us enough protection.
It isn't a question of the definition of the crime that they're objecting to. What they're objecting to is that there's not been a severe enough penalty attached to it. And so I suspect that you may find more argument arising, I predict, over the penalty, how you classify these various things, maybe, than you will over the question of whether or not you've covered their piece of property or the technique by which
you're. Maybe we're out of right all the exceptions to the penalty parts.
You know,
theft of up to $150 is punishable by a year in prison or $500 fine or both, unless it's a cow. In which case,
well, I was asked last session to write a bill that would have required that anybody convicted and set up for the felony of Molly cattle theft couldn't be have a certain 7 years, which is the manslaughter. And I said, pointed this out, and I think the main answer kind of was, well, she didn't count just as bad as she could make.
Went over this hang up that we've half the last hour on section 2, and we've come up with what may be a solution. We suggest that in section 2, on the third line, after wrongfully, we put a colon. And section 1 reads, no, that's right. After wrongfully, you put a colon, right?
Yes.
Section 1 reads, takes, and then we insert appropriates to keep in line with the definitions that we have in section 1. Takes, appropriates, obtains, or withholds such property from an owner thereof, period. Now, 2 would be going back to the prefatory language, he wrongfully acquires property lost, mislaid, etc. Number 3, he wrongfully, and 3 starts, commits theft by extortion as provided in section 4. 5 would be commits theft by deception as provided in section 5. No, that's 4. 5 commits theft by false pretenses as provided in section 6. 6 would be commits theft by receiving stolen property as provided in section 7. Now, Don, explain to him why you felt that this covered the waterfront and we could do this by and eliminate section 1.
Well, I think if we take out sub 1, we will get away from the confusion which apparently is created by, because we refer to these common law larceny and refer to embezzlement. If we use the language that with the addition of the word appropriates, that's broad enough under our definitions, it seems to me, to cover larceny as the common law type of larceny, and also to cover embezzlement. So we would just eliminate the use of the word embezzlement entirely, and it would be covered by definition in our section on definitions. And then of course we would retain the rest of the subsections that appear therein already. That's it. At least it seems to me a possible approach that would get us away from this difficulty we're having, because we're using the words larceny and embezzlement in there. I don't think we need to put a label on it if the conduct is covered by definition.
For Mr. Spaulding's benefit, we had about an hour's discussion relating to Section 2 as it appears in Draft 3, just before you came in, and there was a feeling on the part of some that Section 3, or Section 2 as it presently is, limits larceny only to the 6 enumerated acts, and it wasn't broad enough because it didn't provide for simple larceny.
Mm-hmm.
There was also the feeling that in section, in sub one as it presently is, we're resurrecting a lot of old ghosts and perpetuating a lot of complications that exist in the case and statutory law now, and that it's really unnecessary to do this if the crimes are going to be covered by definition and we're wiping the slate clean and starting new.
It seems to me we'll accomplish what we want to do here, and that is to consolidate all of these different types of conduct into the theft statute, because our definition of appropriate, our definition of deprive, and our definition of obtain will encompass any type of conduct that will deprive an owner of his property, whether it's the type of conduct that traditionally would be looked upon as embezzlement or just a flat out larceny, stealing. It's still going to be covered by reference in section 2 to the, and by use of the words that are defined in section 1.
Does anybody have any,
does that make sense,
any thoughts with regard to this?
It seems like offhand, like today, I'm good suggestion.
Okay, then if there isn't any further discussion with respect to section 2, as amended, we're ready for a motion on his passage. Somebody moves.
I'll move the that section 2 be amended as suggested and,
okay,
and passed.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that section 2 be passed as amended. All in favor say aye.
All right.
Okay, now section 3 on page 2, draft 3, if I'm not mistaken, is identical to the way it was approved in draft number 2. Is this not correct?
Right.
All right, so we've already voted on that. We've approved it. Unless anybody has a suggestion with respect to section 3, it stands approved. Now, section 4 on page 3, is the same as section 6 on page 5 of preliminary draft 2. I mean, this was section 6 in preliminary draft 2. There's some changes made.
Yeah.
Right.
It's substantially the same.
It's substantially the same, but I wanted you to, if you want to refer to the way it was in at our last meeting, you can look at section 6 in draft 2. All right. Now, I suggested, from my initial observation when I looked at section 4, was that in order to be consistent throughout this entire chapter or this entire section, and you'll notice, like in section 3, we say commits, we employ the phrase commits theft, and we do it all the way through, that we should say rather than a person obtains property by extortion, we should say a person commits theft by extortion.
Good suggestion.
All right. Now, that brings us next to the business that we discussed at the outset, will in the future. And, the floor is open for discussion. Did we conclude that we should leave it the way it is? I forgot.
Well, my thinking was that I don't think it's necessary for the prepositional phrase in the future to be placed in such a way as to modify all of the subsequent subsections. I don't think it does any violence to the section that way. But my purpose originally in the draft number 2
was to have it modify only the threat to cause physical injury to some person, to differentiate between a threat to do physical injury to some person in the future, which would be theft by extortion, rather than a threat to do imminent physical injury to some person, which would be robbery. And so it's, I think either way, I think that it gets at what we were trying to accomplish.
Wow. Will itself would indicate the future, wouldn't it? So if you only want in the future to apply to subsection 1, aren't you going to have to colon after another will in the future cause physical injury to some person, or 2, will cause damage to property, or 3, will engage in other conduct?
Can't you leave the will in before the colon?
And not use the words in the future?
Well, that's what he's suggesting.
See, the way it appeared in the second draft was the actor or another will, colon, 1, cause physical injury to some person in the future.
You also commit robbery by threatening to cause damage to property or to engage in some other conduct constituting a crime, though. You're worrying about the robbery statute, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, I think it, I don't really know. It seems to me, too, that will could be in the next second actually constitute the present.
But isn't premeditation and murder a pretty short time under something?
Mm-hmm. I have enough to premeditate.
Yeah. If you're a fast thinker, it doesn't take very long. It seems that imminent is also in the future. You know, anything that's occurring after the instant is in the future. Whether it's...
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think you're right there. It's just that I was trying to draw this distinction in the statute so that there wouldn't be any confusion on the part of a prosecutor whether or not this certain set of facts amounted to theft by extortion or amounted to robbery. Of course, robbery will be what this commission and what the legislature subsequently defines it to be under the new revision. So,
but well, isn't robbery plain or simple theft by extortion?
It's a present taking, isn't it?
Yeah. Or how did you put the word thereafter between? If the property is not so delivered, the actor or another
will
thereafter.
Colon.
Cause physical injury.
Yeah.
Because it's if he does not deliver, that is where the threat comes in, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but in the first part of that, you wanted to either deliver it now. No, I guess you don't.
Well, thereafter, robbery. If you don't have me your money,
that's true.
Thereafter, it's the same as will. Well, look, we debated this long and hard before and finally concluded to put them in the future where we did. If it's a consensus that it doesn't do any violence to the to our intent, why don't we leave it where it is? I don't have any strong feelings on it.
Well, I don't think it does any violence to the intent. You could eliminate it completely and still have a theft by extortion section here that I think is sensible, but it seems to me if you do leave it in, that you may be showing a legislative intent here to distinguish between this and robbery.
long as it doesn't sometime in the future become a Supreme Court case that rules out both statutes, so I'm satisfied it doesn't use it.
Now,
Section 8 is going to apply to a lot of editorial writers.
only if they're on the State Board of Education, Criminal Law Revision Commission. Or the Judicial Council, could we say? I'm just going to kind of keep this thing rolling, and if I skip over something that somebody wants to bring up, have no hesitancy to call me on it. I'm going to skip down here to 6. And we had some discussion concerning this at the last meeting. And the discussion appears on page 7 of the minutes. Now, as I look at this, this subsection is taken principally from 223.4 of the Model Penal Code and 3201 of Michigan. And you might want to open your books to those sections because I have a couple of questions to ask Don, and I'm going to take that minute. I notice 223.4 says, bring about or continue a strike, and 3201 says, bring about or continue a strike. Now we say cause, which is synonymous with bring about a strike. Why don't we also say or continue? Why don't we put that in too? Extortion can definitely prolong something. I'm obviously not going to get Labor's endorsement in 1970.
But. I may have forgotten.
this isn't going to hinder legitimate bargaining.
No.
No problem for labor, for legitimate labor.
And I've got one other observation to make in the Michigan Code. They say, bring about or continue a strike, boycott, or other similar collective action. And the Model Penal Code says, bring about or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective unofficial action. We say boycott or other collective labor group action.
Why do you put the word labor in there?
Yeah. I'm wondering if possibly the language in either
could be
the
Methodist
other two
church, couldn't it? Isn't that? But not the Methodist.
No. Unitarian.
Yeah, although I think that where this would usually come from would be a labor group. I think that there could be other types of organizations that would
collective group.
Particularly boycott.
Boycott certainly.
But if we say collective unofficial action, then we exclude tainting this with the, we allay a lot of legitimate labor fears, don't we? Because we go on and we have an exception a little bit later on saying that this doesn't apply if it's a legitimate labor.
You just strike out the word labor, then what have you done? Yeah.
You could strike group then too, but don't collective even group mean about the same?
Cause of community, or rather collective action. Well, that's what Michigan does. They just say collective action. The Model Penal Code says collective unofficial action.
I dislike the unofficial as much as I dislike the labor group. I don't like to spell out particular rights for a labor group that, even by inference, that don't exist for all groups. And I don't like the unofficial because getting into the problem of a hang-up over minor rights, minor groups, civil rights groups, boycott rights. They get pretty unofficial sometimes. At the same time, they ought to have a right to try, and the person who's opposing them ought to have a right to stop them. I'm afraid that unofficial makes it too narrow.
Would it be the consensus then if we, at least so far as we've gone, that we amend this by having it read cause or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective action?
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So be it. Now, I don't have any other personal comments with respect to six. We worked and reworked it at our last meeting, and I think it's pretty good. All right. The move will approve 6 is amended. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Passed. Okay. Section 6 is approved as amended.
Section 4.
Are you
voting on the whole section or just on subsection 6?
Subsection 6. However, I would point out that sub 7 and sub 8 and sub 9, 7 and 8 are identical as they were approved in draft 2. Sub 9 is an amendment that the subcommittee made at the last meeting, which we felt was better than the more lengthy language in sub 9 in draft 2. And we might say that the language of sub 9 is identical to the language in the Model Penal Code. Inflict any other harm which would not benefit the actor. Like the U.S. Constitution, the more simple, the better. Is there any other discussion with respect to the remainder of Section 4? And if not, I think we're ready for a motion with respect to Section 4 as amended.
Motion to approve Section 4 as amended.
Okay, motion made that we approve Section 4 as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Alright. Now, let's just go to Section 5. This is the new section. That the committee asked the staff to draft at the last subcommittee meeting. And we had some preliminary talk about it when we started out, and I cut that short because I wanted Mr. Spaulding to be here so that we could all participate in this. And I'm wondering preliminarily if, I don't know really, I'm talking out loud. We say here, a person commits theft if he obtains property of another by deception. Should we not say obtains, withholds, or appropriates, or is that necessary? Property of another by deception. A person commits theft if he obtains, appropriates, or withholds property of another by deception.
Well, I think if he's withholding, property, or if he's what was your other word?
Appropriates.
Well, now appropriates. I can see appropriate might be beneficial in there. I think with if he withholds. If he withholds property of another, it's going to be covered elsewhere.
Where?
Well, I'm not sure how you're going to withhold by deception.
A trustee.
Yeah. But wouldn't that be covered by our section on that defines defines theft, which encompasses embezzlement.
You didn't add that kind of language on your extortion one.
No.
To parallel that, this would read something like, a person commits theft by deception when with intent to defraud he creates, fails, presents.
Wait, say that again, Kathy.
A person commits theft by deception when with intent to defraud he
A person commits theft by deception when with intent to defraud he creates, confirms, etc.
Yeah, that's what I thought
of. Okay. That's, I think that's pretty good. Agreed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. Alright. Any other thoughts with respect to a person commits theft
by deception when, comma, with intent to defraud, comma, he.
Aren't you going to have it put in property somewhere in there?
Well, I think I was hoping that you were covered with that one. You have covered it under your revision of section 2, in which you say a person commits theft when with intent to deprive, and one of your things is by extortion, by deception.
Right.
So that you were going to avoid repeating it.
Yeah, that's real good.
I think that.
Okay. Basically, he's a thief. We're just getting down to the details of how.
Alright. Now.
Now, Mr. Chairman, earlier, now before Mr. Spaulding arrived at the beginning of the meeting, I mentioned the comments that appear here that shows you the derivation of this section and how it has been changed and what new language we've put in. Appears at the very beginning of your book there on preliminary draft number 3 under comment on the proposed revision. Makes it a little more understandable, I think, if you...
It might be of interest to know that the Connecticut preliminary draft quits with A.
Quits with A?
Yeah, A is the only one that is included in that one. It does not go through the B, C, and D. Makes it a considerably narrower...
And I think it's... Frank, I think that's too narrow. I think it leaves out conduct that could be just as detrimental to the victim.
The subsection 2 is taken in whole from section 3 or 223.3 of the Model Penal Code.
Yes, except representations,
right,
is a new word.
Deception does not include falsity as to matters having no pecuniary significance or representations unlikely to deceive ordinary persons in the group addressed.
There goes all comparative price advertising.
Gee, way ahead of me.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'd like to see it go too. I think it's very good. It's pretty common.
But isn't this a representation unlikely to deceive ordinary persons?
That's on your definition of ordinary person.
That's, of course, always what you're talking
about.
Well, of course, this isn't necessarily going to eliminate that type of conduct from being criminal. It's going to be it would get down to a jury question in a given case, whether this representation had any pecuniary significance or whether it was the type of statement that would be likely to deceive. I think that's a question of fact. That we're not eliminating this type of conduct completely as possibly criminal, but.
I don't know what pecuniary significance means.
Well, it means that there may be a false statement, but you're not going to be hurt money-wise by it or property-wise because of it. That maybe the individual has misled you about something that really isn't pertinent to the transaction. Maybe he's misled you about his background or who he's connected with or that he has some particular connection that he doesn't really have, and he has used this to induce you into entering into an agreement or giving up some property, but that you still get what you bargained for. You haven't lost anything in the process, although technically speaking, he's misled you.
Wouldn't that be covered up here in A, where you say, or other state of mind?
Creative art and ground.
If you create another a state of mind to believe the things you just mentioned.
But that's qualified by 2, which says that state, if that doesn't have any pecuniary significance, then it doesn't come within here, right?
That was the idea.
Were you talking at one point about putting the word fact in there, too? It was a false impression of law, value, fact.
Well, I suggested putting in brief false impression of law, fact, but I think the fact would be covered by other state of mind. Wouldn't you?
Well, that's the reason I didn't put it in, although we did talk about, Kathleen and I had talked about fact, the word fact being in there, and it might make it clearer if we inserted it.
Have an instance here where you might be able to set aside a contract, I suspect, on the representation of fact that was material, and inducing you to buy a piece of property, for instance, or something or other, that would be sufficient to get you out of the contract, but it might not be sufficient to prosecute the individual for a criminal. Like the piece of property and who the neighbors are and how much money they have or something like that.
The school bus is by the door and
we have to cannot lose sight of the fact that what we're talking about here is theft. And we're codifying the various crimes involving theft. And it would certainly follow that if there's misrepresentation in a matter having no pecuniary significance, the exchange involved wouldn't constitute theft. It almost follow. I'm so totally unfamiliar with the movement in the other states in these areas that it's hard for me to put this in perspective, but I see nothing wrong with this.
Well, now, let me tell you what the Tandy draft number 2 in the Model Penal Code says about it. in view of the elimination of the issue of materiality. And then we'd have to go back to that. We can, but they go on to say, it seems desirable to exclude from the possibility of theft prosecution cases such as those in which a salesman misrepresents his political or lodge affiliations. It may be desirable on other grounds to punish such falsehoods, but they are too remote from the basic concern, which is to protect property interests. By hypothesis, in the cases covered by subsection 4, which is their basic section here on impressions, I think, the deceived person received everything that he bargained for in the way of property.
The real estate salesman said the school bus goes by the door, and this property isn't underwater any time of the year, but it turns out to be that this is the case, then that he's deceived a little bit there. Is he guilty of theft?
He might be guilty of common law fraud.
Well, under a new statute now.
That might have some pecuniary significance.
Yeah, it might.
Yeah.
Sure.
The water would.
The water sure is actually. But I think, like, where I might go out to buy some property and act as though I'm the guy that's going to buy it. But I want to, if I am buying it for some big lumber company or something, that they could hold up for a lot more dough than they did for me. That wouldn't be theft under this, because that wouldn't have any pecuniary significance. I wouldn't think, so long as I didn't say I'm not buying it for,
omitted facts, are they? Yeah. A lot of business deals are consummated with omitted facts, you know.
Right.
But I have deception involved.
No, but then you're failing to correct the false impression which you previously created or confirmed.
There's a question I have about it, since this is a defense.
This is a defense, that's right.
Is that, it says, unlikely to deceive ordinary persons in the group addressed. So you would then judge or determine the guilt of the man by the gullibility of the particular group. And some groups are obviously much more gullible than others.
Standard medical practice in Bend, Oregon.
Right.
So, same thing.
Even more so.
Yeah.
If you're addressing the group of brokers, talking to them about some kind of stock transactions and so forth, would be one thing. But if you're a group addressing the Ladies' Aid Society of the Presbyterian Church, it could be quite another. And it might be quite difficult to establish, either as a matter of prosecution or defense.
Yeah, it seems to me that this is giving a defense lawyer a wide open thing to
talk about.
That would be a hard concept for a jury to understand.
To understand.
Quite easily.
Very.
Well, I might belong to two or three different groups, too, so I could apply a standard in one group that might be much higher or much lower.
Well, what the model penal code reporters were trying to do was strike a balance here between a flat-out exemption of liability, criminal liability for any kind of puffing, was thought of as puffing, or statements that shouldn't, in most cases, deceive anybody or deceive any reasonable person, and also the kind of conduct that where there might be some doubt whether it's really puffing or whether you might get into a criminal act. And they were trying to say with this language that if it was unlikely to deceive ordinary persons in a group addressed.
But isn't that a question within your intent to defraud?
The reasonable man standard.
Right. And what person could reasonably believe, and what the actor in good faith may have thought. An actor in good faith may be out here representing an insurance company. was trying to sell group insurance. And he may, in absolute good faith, believe what he's telling the group that his insurance company can and is capable of doing, when in fact it's false.
Or what their normal practice is.
Or what their normal practice is false. The insurance company, we've had one case where there was some indication of it. The insurance company sent agents out, conceivably with the deliberate intent of having their agents misrepresent what this company was going to do on a certain type of contract. And the agent may have been absolutely innocent. But it would seem to me like that if this whole thing would be covered by your intent to defraud thing.
Well, I'm wondering, moreover, if this business about pecuniary significance doesn't relate to theft. I mean, what you're saying is you don't know whether this is necessary, isn't that right?
Right.
And
it is necessary to specifically include a defense. Then it would seem to me like that the defense is one of intent or good faith or the knowledge, whatever it may be, of the actor and not of the people he's necessarily talking to.
Well, I'll tell you, now my thinking here was that this whole section on theft by deception is new ground that we're plowing here. We're getting into an area that where we're not requiring a false token, and we're not saying that it has to be an impression of fact, present or past fact. We're creating a much broader area of criminal liability here than anything we've ever had in the state before. And to allay the fears of some people when they see this kind of a provision in our criminal law, I thought it might be worthwhile to have something like that in the statute to show the intent, legislative intent, that we weren't intending to get off into areas of mass advertising and this type of thing, where you get a lot of extraordinarily exaggerated statements made that maybe deceive some people, but they shouldn't and probably wouldn't be looked upon as deceptive to the average person in this particular group that receives this these representations. And my thinking was that it was a more cautious approach to this new area of criminality.
Well, would this then become something that the prosecution would have to negative, or you'd have be able to establish one of these other things, or?
You'd have to show that it was with intent to be fraud.
Right.
Who's scratching out here?
No, we didn't. We say a person who is theft by the deception when with intent to defraud.
Oh, did we leave that in? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is, this properly is a defense, isn't it? Or is it not?
Well, it's a defense, but things can still be a defense, and the prosecution still has to negative. Like the defense of self-defense. Self-paramedicates. Well, it is a defense.
Well, my thought was that not to make this an element that would have to be pleaded and proved by the prosecution.
Should it more if assuming that we agree that we want it, should we put it over here in the section under defenses, section 10? I noticed sub 3 of section 10 relates only to extortion. This would relate only to deception. I think probably if we want it, we probably should leave it where it is, but I'm just raising it.
Well, trying to think what some of the other revisions do not include any of this language. and some of them go far beyond that. So it's just a question of where you want to.
This came from model penal code.
Yes.
Well, what's the committee's wish? The chairman always gets off the hook when he's confused by asking the committee.
Well, I think the direction is correct. I think we need some criminal law to cover some conduct that now takes place that people need some protection on. My objection to it strictly political, and I don't want to see the advertising managers of 21 daily newspapers, 110 weekly newspapers, 63 Oregon radio stations, 7 television stations, and so forth and so on, all standing up in front of the Judiciary Committee in the next legislature screaming about the comparative pricing, for example. Some of these trade claims that you're not generally harmful to people in the group addressed, but on which you'll have a hard time persuading them. They aren't going to be hauled into court.
Now, let me see if I understand. If we leave it in, they won't be up there. If we leave it in, they will be there.
I think we leave it as is. I like the model penal code's term. Deceive does not, then you have to change because you've got deceptions. It does not, however, include falsity as the matter of having no opportunity or puffing by statements unlikely to deceive ordinary persons in the group.
You actually like that?
I like the puffing by statements rather than representation.
And that was the very point at which you departed from the model penal code.
Yeah, and Kathleen and I discussed that, and we felt by putting puffing in there, we're inserting a word that
limits it to oral or written.
Well, we felt statements would limit it, and puffing, of course, is something that difficult of definition.
It is an accepted word in this.
Lots of decisions are made.
Lots of
decisions. Sales puffery is, I think a generally known term. I need to go back and add it in a section under definitions, but I think there's plenty of occasions that cover the
description. Yeah, in fact, I think the Michigan draft incorporates they use the word puffing and then they go on to define what puffing means.
I think that's kind of a word that juries like the committee.
But we felt we were saying the same thing by saying representations unlikely to deceive.
Well, I presume you are, and I presume that either the district attorney or the defense lawyer will define puffing define representations in these terms anyway. I have no, as I say, I think it may cause us a political problem, but I have no basic protection for you.
Ed, what do you think?
I don't know. If we adopt this, we reject Section 6.
Section 6?
How do you mean? You mean the next section?
Yeah.
No, we're gonna keep that. But we're only concerned with sub 2.
At this time.
Yeah. At this
Well, I would leave it in. Just because as you say, we're going into a new field and making something criminal that hasn't been
quite
before. And there might be some danger of prosecutor wasn't up. A lot of feeling against him accused. And while it's probably included in with intent to defraud, I think it's well to spell it out as something that was definitely talked about a little bit different than the old phrase intent to defraud.
How about sub 3? That has its origin where?
It's the New York Code, and also the Model Penal Code has similar provisions.
Where in the Model Penal Code is that? False promise.
Well, it's an A under 223.3, second half of the
several. Oh, yeah, right.
Attention.
Right, okay.
And that is in the present law in Oregon, is it not a false promise?
Well, I think the court should say so.
Yeah. But you can't. The mere fact that before
it's sufficient. Yeah. Right.
That just makes it so puts up a better argument.
Promise well defined, or we know what promise means.
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
Okay. This is a question for the jury.
Okay, well then I guess we're ready for a motion for section 5.
Well, what about, I've got some misgivings on section D. Whether that is or is not a matter of official record. Always we have thought that where something is recorded and constructed notice to everybody, that's the end of it.
Of course, this presumes that the purchaser has a degree of intelligence necessary to either go to the courthouse and look up the record, or two, is smart enough to hire a lawyer. Diligent enough to go to the courthouse.
Yeah, but this says that if he doesn't, then he's the victim and can prosecute, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It says that he commits theft by deception if, with intent to defraud, he sells or otherwise transfers or encumbers property. Failing to disclose a lien, adverse title, or other legal impediment to the enjoyment of the property, whether such impediment is or is not valid, or is not a matter of official record.
Yeah, there could be a completely invalid, whatever that is, an invalid impediment.
Invalid, unrecorded impediment.
One that's unenforceable, that thereby is just some trouble, even though it's on record. The guy can still be prosecuted for not disclosing that, and that seems to me like it goes too far.
Don't you think, though, that if you go back to by deception with intent to defraud, which has to become a basic part of it, of the sentence?
I suppose you'd have to. One place where this could certainly sneak up on a seller would be some county road that was established 50 years ago and never anything done about it, but it's in the records. If the road is there. And would run right through where the man builds his house.
Like your case over at Lincoln County.
Right. The only thing that would save the seller would be this intent to defraud.
Well, if there was an invalid, unrecorded impediment, and the seller sold the property, and the purchaser endeavored to prosecute him because this impediment existed, the prosecutor couldn't prove intent to defraud, could he?
Of course, it's invalid. It might come under the grounds that it's not deception because it's falsity if the man is having a representation of the man having pecuniary significance.
Why put it in here at all?
Well, wouldn't you correct that problem by inserting the semicolon after property and striking until the striking through record? Then you're by deception with intent to defraud, failing to disclose a lien, adverse claim, or other legal impediment to the enjoyment of the property.
Unless the same is a matter of official record.
No, I was
I want that record to be a defense. other words, if that...
Well, I would think the record would be a defense.
It would go... It would...
Certainly go to...
Go to the intent, wouldn't it?
And it would certainly go to the... By deception and intent to defraud, I think. I think you put a semicolon after property and strike the thing down through record.
Are we just talking about real property here?
No, that's what...
No, I'd say personal property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, it could cover certain personal property. You know,
no,
it could be mortgaged.
That's a real problem, you know, in the sale of airplane, where you can only record liens legally in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you can only record liens against aircraft in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, that are bars to the transfer of title.
And
if you want to be completely safe, why you call up a practitioner before the FAA in Oklahoma City and have him go down and you stand on the phone, the buyer and seller stand on the phone and he says, there is no lien filed as of such and such a time. And you have a file and bang.
That's like mortgages on ships, too.
Yes, they're federally licensed. And ship mortgages, the same problem. I'd guess that this would cause some changes in the general practice of the real estate business in Oregon, but I don't see anything wrong with causing some changes.
Well, it's only going to cause some criminal liability. And automobile.
And automobile.
And
automobile.
Well,
sales.
Yeah, used car sales.
It's going to be a tough pass, as a matter of fact.
Commits theft by deception if, with intent to defraud, he sells or otherwise transfers or encumbers property, failing to disclose a lien, adverse claim, or other legal impediment to the enjoyment of the property.
Or he says he'll go 175 miles an hour when he knows he'll only go 125.
No, he's no liens on it. Like one down here recorded. Or when somebody just claims to have a valid lien and the thing isn't valid at all. I think maybe part of what I'm saying is whether such impediment is or is not valid is a kind of defeats the whole darn thing.
It's not really impediment, but
it's
valid.
No, it
isn't. Well, it isn't a lien if it's not valid.
Of course, your actor might have an intent to defraud, and as far as he knows, this lien or impediment may be valid or it may not be valid. But his intent
to defraud might still be. It wouldn't be a defense that the thing just happened to be technically invalid. I see your point, yeah.
The person enjoying the property could still be harassed.
Mm-hmm. And as he says, the actor may have thought it was valid. And then when he gets prosecuted, to his good luck, he finds that there was some technical difficulty with it. that makes more sense now.
You don't care whether your client's recorded or not.
In
other words, it would eliminate a situation where the man says, well, yeah, I didn't tell him about that lien, but what the heck, it turned out it wasn't any good anyway. It wasn't a valid lien after all, but still.
You've already established that he intended to defraud him.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I withdraw my suggestion.
Well, the whole thing hinges on this intent to defraud.
Yeah.
Ready for motion?
Yeah.
We're going to move Section 5 as amended.
Very well.
Okay.
One second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Section 6. Now, I've got a suggestion to make. This is completely new. I want to suggest that rather than obtaining property by false pretenses, the caption here read theft by false pretenses, and that also it read a person commits theft by false pretenses when with intent to defraud he. Those are two suggestions that I have up to that point. Do they meet with any objection. They're mechanical. Suggestive.
Yeah, it would make that section consistent with the rest of the draft.
All right. Now, 165.205, which is the present law, says property or money. We discussed this at our last subcommittee meeting. Isn't it agreed that property, as is defined in section 1 of this draft 3, is sufficient? Well, it includes money, so
it
there's
includes
no
money.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We keep the requirement for a false token that ORS 136.560 presently has. Does anybody looks okay to me? Does anybody have any?
This is what I mean: a false token, comma, false pretense, or a false device.
Well, you know, pretense is false by its very nature.
Well,
not necessarily.
It
device necessarily.
By any false. The token doesn't necessarily apply in all cases, does it?
No, the false applies.
The false applies to those three things.
Right.
Yeah, that's really what we're at.
Well, then token doesn't apply at all times.
No, it's just a three different kinds of things. One's a false token, one's a false
right.
pretense, or one's a false device.
Right.
And of course, the value of this section and what I was intending to do is get to the objection that was raised the last meeting that we weren't requiring a false token in certain cases, and
well, we still aren't in all cases.
No, we're not in all cases.
But we're requiring a false token in obtaining cases, aren't we? But we're not requiring a false token in embezzlement cases.
We're not requiring a false token if you got a false pretense under this section,
right.
As I read it.
Right. Yeah, in this section.
And the other one, and they got a separate section that says no evidence shall be admitted unless there is a false token.
Mm.
I recall it, there is.
Yeah, there is. You're right.
Well, I hate to ask it, but what really is difference between section 5 and section 6? And what type of crimes are we dealing with that are different there?
Well, in section 5, you come down kind of close to making the crimes where if the buyer some money that he doesn't intend to repay, you do make that a crime if he doesn't intend to repay. Section 6 is
reports his wife's signature on a note.
Yeah, or a false token, is it like a check or something else that's no good? And a pretense, and is a verbal thing, isn't it? Might be, I mean.
Could be a uniform, I suppose.
Yeah. Representation, either by written, oral, or act, or failure to act.
What's the difference between that and 5A?
I mean, they might well overlap.
They might overlap. The difference could be that that you've got something other than an oral misrepresentation. That you've got a reliance here on the part of the victim on a
see what I'm
on a
concerned about is this kind of a thing that you turn an indictment charging a person with some conduct of this kind and you Recently, it clearly says will be charged under Section 5A. And that can say, well, after what you were doing is charging Section 6, defend Section 6, so on and so on. This kind of thing. And maybe you'll have penalties of sufficient difference.
How's that again?
Well, I'm concerned about, to me, as a matter of the similarity between 5A, for instance, and 6. Either one of them, for instance, would cover a bad check.
Well, let me say this. I'm not overwhelmed with Section 6.
You take the token out of it. You leave the token in, of course, then that's a different thing. But take the token out of it, then...
And the whole reason I put it in there, and it wasn't in before, and I didn't intend to have even a separate section on obtaining, was because of the concern that was voiced at the last meeting about requiring a false token, that there are cases where we should have something other than just parole statements and that sort of thing. Now, well, whether this accomplishes that, I don't know.
Right? I would think that then this would permit the prosecutor always to call it a pretense and not have to establish a false token.
Well, I'm not completely sure I'm taking on the idea of requiring a false token, but I think I'm pretty well, after going through Section 5, I think I'm okay. I'm not necessarily requiring a false token, but when you're in such a grand an area, it's really sensitive, isn't it?
Well, Section 5, theft by deception, is something new to Oregon law. But let me just read the OMFP statute under our existing Oregon law to give you an idea of what it is. It's 165.205. Any person who, by any false pretenses or privity or false token, and with intent to defraud, obtains or attempts to obtain from any person any money or property, or who obtains or attempts to obtain with like intent the signature of any person to any writing, the false making of which would be punishable as forgery, shall be punished, etc. It's kind of long. You hope to cover what that covered with the shorter language, right?
The shorter language, and then of course the reference to forgery.
That
would be picked up. That would be picked up subsequently in our forgery. Sections.
All right. Well.
No. Does anybody want to be bothered with telephone calls? Anybody expecting an important call? No.
Let's ask this question. Is there a consensus that what we cover in Section 6 is covered in Section 5 and the 6 is redundant?
If you have the false token and it seems to be under 5, you've just got a better case for the prosecution. It's going to be easier to prove that you created a false impression or whatever it was. You can show the means by which this...
Yeah,
it's not just an oral representation.
I can't really think of any prosecutor in his right mind
going
in
under
Section 6 if he can take him under 5.
Are we going to have to add false token then back to Section 5?
No.
You're just going to leave a false token out of the business. Ignore this from now on.
I think this is the basic question. We might as well talk about it. Got it? Are we going to require a false token after this, or aren't we?
When we approved Section 5, we decided we were not.
Well, there's another section, though, that we're... where we have to have...
Well,
I'm I'm willing to be swayed either way almost, but boy.
Well, Section 5 would
have be prepared to defend it when we take this to the full committee, believe me.
Well, the way Tony runs that gavel, all you have to do ahead of time is just tell him which way you go, and we won't have a chance to discuss it.
Tony has some notions on this, too, I bet.
Well, then don't mention it to him. All right. Well,
that is a serious step to make all pretenses criminal and eliminate the false token. That is a very important thing. I'm a little hesitant about it, but...
Well, we already did it.
We already did it, and I...
So
I thought a lot before I voted on
it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've made your mind up.
Well, I've still got it. I mean, we're hanging on by a petition for rehearing in the Third Court of Appeals on a tax case. A tax fraud case where the thing involved a claim that the guy obtained money by false pretenses and thereby it became income, taxable income. Because he borrowed money from a whole lot of people that he didn't intend to repay. And the court permitted the government to prove that over a period of 20 years he borrowed from Tom, Dick, and Harry, which showed that in 1961 he didn't intend to repay certain monies in 1961. And you can get an awful lot of prejudice against the poor guy with a jury on that kind of thing. He doesn't pay his debts, and it kind of gave me the idea or the feeling that we're putting people in jail for not paying debts, which is adverse to our concept of what's right and fair. You do it in Old England. But that is a case right square in the nose, that what this is doing. But I still voted for it.
Well, like I said at the last meeting, some prosecutors endeavor to get around the false token requirement by going on a theory of larceny by trick, a common law larceny by trick theory.
Of course, in that situation, though, you get into this trying to distinguish between whether it was possession that was lost or title that was lost, too.
Yeah,
and, you know, it may not necessarily fit as one or the other, because maybe title passed, maybe it didn't, but...
Well,
I'd like to make one other point on this, though, if I may, before you decide to vote.
Are you defending it? It's included?
Well, I'm not really sure I'm defending it, but I think I ought to point this out, that we've got to remember that up to now, we haven't taken any action on any penalty provisions. And it may well be that you might want to think that because, say, in a theft by deception situation where the defendant has used a false token, or something that would reinforce or tend to make it more likely that the victim would believe the misrepresentation, that this type of conduct might warrant a more severe penalty, and if he obtains property by using a false token, that this is a more heinous type of crime than a flat-out theft by deception. And for that reason, you might want a separate section. I'm not necessarily advocating this, but I think it's... something that you might want to consider.
Reinforce the representations unlikely to deceive ordinary persons in a group address.
Oh, it seems to me that if I get $10,000 by being a doggone good talker, but does it fraudulently, he's just as guilty as the guy that uses the false token. It's just easier to prove on the false token. But the conduct is the same.
Yeah, I think, and the result's the same, but looking at it from the standpoint of the likelihood of deceiving somebody, you might be a lot more likely to deceive somebody if you've got a false token, something he can look at and say, gee, that looks
be a lot more clever.
So that looks pretty good to me.
If he's got a motorman's cap on,
I
can sell
the
other
one. The other one, though, that is in the presence of the false token, you increase the probability of conviction. So whether you sentence him more harshly or not, if he's been using that, then somebody's...